All right, you're on the Arms Room with Glenn.
And Ryan.
And no John today. So sad. So sad. John's actually going to be gone for the next couple of weeks. He's got things, stuff and things to do in places. Thank you to all of our patrons from Patreon for supporting our show and helping us do what we do and helping us give back to you. Make sure that you're checking all the extra content out, the freaking show reviews, the blogs, the extra $10 shows, that you're sending in your show ideas, that you're participating in the giveaways. It's always interesting to me sometimes how few people actually participate in the giveaways because it's like, it's free shit, man.
Free.
Whatever. Sometimes we get like 30 or 40 entries and sometimes we get like 3 or 4. So, I mean, your chances are always really good to win if you ever want to freaking participate.
I'm going
to
start participating so I can get the stuff.
It's pretty easy to do, Apparently. It's happy Memorial Day to everybody. And, you know,
I can't say happy Memorial
Day. I can't say happy Memorial Day. But I can say happy Memorial Day for this reason.
Yeah.
I see memes. Try to think of the. Can I say things in a polite way? Is that possible for me?
You want to write it down first?
Let me write it down and see. Read it back to myself. Does that sound polite? Here's my problem with when people are like, just in case you thought it was about barbecues, and then they show someone like crying at a military funeral. I'm like, look, dude. The people I know who have passed, do you know what they would want me to do today?
Not sit around crying.
Not sit around crying.
Nope.
They would want me to hang out with my friends, hang out with my family, because they don't get to do that anymore.
Right.
They would want me to drink a beer for them. They would want me to have a freaking barbecue. They would want me to remember them.
Celebrate them.
And celebrate them.
And celebrate your life.
So when I say happy Memorial Day, I don't mean like happy Dead Soldiers Day.
Yeah.
I mean happy, be happy
sure.
On Memorial Day.
Yeah. I agree with that.
Because that's who it's for.
Yeah. I'm still weird when it comes to a holiday like this. Even July 4th. I mean, all holidays when encompassing, you know, anything about a veterans war or anything like that, still kind of a weird spot for me.
Why?
I don't know. For the longest time, for 12 years, I was in the military. So I'm like, this shit's dumb.
Right.
Don't celebrate me.
Right.
And then I get out, and then it's just kind of, I guess, a sore spot. You know what I mean?
I do. I also think that people, I'll hear veterans get all bent sideways out of the freaking, Memorial Day thing. Someone will be like, hey, it's Memorial Day. Thank you for your service. And they're all like, it's from my dead brother's brother. You know what I mean? And you're like, dude, pump the fucking brakes. All right? The average person may or may not totally appreciate or understand, and maybe they're a little confused. So why don't you take this as an opportunity to say thank you. Thank you for thinking of our service members. So today is actually Memorial Day.
Mm-hmm.
In Memorial Day, we remember those who didn't come home.
Yeah.
In November, for Veterans Day, we remember those who did.
Right.
But thank you for your support. I appreciate that. And thank you for being a good patriot and for taking care of things at home and for having a family and for having a job and for putting into the taxes so that I could launch fucking rockets at your expense. thank you. Thank you for that.
Yeah.
As opposed to being like, oh, this is for my dead brothers. It's like, dude, relax. You know what I mean? I think that's my sore spot when it comes to these kinds of freaking holidays.
Well, yeah, I mean, people that are like that you just described, they have more to process. They haven't started processing whatever is that chip on the shoulder or whatever pains them still.
Sure.
I mean, I stopped wearing my KIA bracelet probably about about a year ago. Mm-hmm. I stopped wearing my KA bracelet because I thought about it. I was like, I don't need a reminder that, my buddy died. I don't.
Yeah.
I'm never
going to forget it.
I have his memory. That's what I want is his memory. Mm-hmm. I don't need a reminder that he's dead. Like, that's not fun.
Yeah. And I mean, I know those things are popular, but I think that's just what they are personally.
Yeah.
Personally. I don't wear them. I've never worn one. I think that they're a popular thing to wear.
They are. Yeah, and it was a tradition in regiment as a private. So when I got to regiment as a private, I had to get a bracelet I didn't know anyone in a regiment that died.
Right.
So my first bracelet was for somebody that just did research I connected with, and it was a ranger that died before I was even in the military.
Right.
And then obviously when someone that I knew, someone that I cared about passed, then I wore their bracelet and so on and so forth. So it was a tradition in regiment.
Mm.
So I wore one all the time.
Which is different when it's a tradition.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I think like a lot of things, like a paracord bracelet or anything else, mm-hmm. I think for a lot of people it becomes just a kind of almost like a pop culture thing to do. Because I see people who aren't even veterans wearing them.
Sure.
Which is fine. Do your thing. I'm not like, how dare you? I'm not like that. But it's just like, okay. Yeah. That whatever.
It's just like – if you're wearing a bracelet, like a KIA bracelet, like why are you wearing it? If you're wearing it for a reminder of his death, maybe you shouldn't be wearing it for a reminder of his death. Because you shouldn't be reminded that every single day that someone you cared about died.
Right.
You need to live your life. That's what hit me was I need to live my life. I don't need to wake up every day remembering that he died. Mm-hmm. There's not a day that goes by that I don't think about him. Right. But now I think about him rather than being
remembering
like,
he died.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And I think for me, like, that's what Memorial Day is all about. I had a chance, what's it been now? A couple months ago, I guess, when I went to D.C. And that was my first time I'd ever been to Arlington.
Oh, yeah.
And so it was a very moving experience for me because it's so big, man. Arlington is massive, right?
Oh, yeah.
And I had a chance to go see a couple of guys that were important to me. And it was a very interesting experience. But I wouldn't want a reminder of that every day.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like,
no, absolutely.
Kneeling there by their gravestone, I don't want to do that every fucking day. That was tough for me. I would not want to do that every day. And so for me, it's like if I'm going to have a Memorial Day for them,
mm-hmm.
I want to drink some beer, tell some jokes, have some fun,
mm-hmm.
raise one in the freaking sky and say, I'm living my life for you or not living my life for you, but I'm living my life in – I don't even know the right way to say it, in gratitude of what you've done maybe.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I've always thought about celebrating their life. Instead of mourning their death.
Right.
There's a time to mourn, but it's not for the rest of your life.
No.
You got to live your life.
No.
And it's funny you say that as far as not going to their site, their tombstone, or whatever it is every single day. In my will when I was in the military and all the paperwork as far as what would happen if I was going to be buried in Arlington rather than here in Arizona because I didn't want that for my family.
Right.
I wanted to be far away from my family.
So far away, right.
So if something happened to me, my mom would probably set up a camp and live there if I got buried here in Arizona. So now it was going to be more of a, hey, we're going to visit rather than going there every single day.
Right, right.
That was something for me.
That's a good way to think about it too. Huh?
Yeah.
So this weekend, had a great time teaching carbine classes.
That was fun.
Really had a good time. Ryan was there with me for day one. Day two was a smaller class, so I handled it on my own, and holy shit, was it windy. But we had a good time, and it really was a reminder of a couple of things. The first big reminder of just how many people come to like the level one training class compared to how many people come to the level two training class. It's always an interesting thing because it's always about 50%. If we have 20 people in day one, we'll have 10 people in day two.
Mm-hmm.
If we have 15 people in day one, we'll have 7 or 8 in day two. I mean, I don't know why that is.
Mm-hmm.
It's just how it is. Like historically, that's how it's worked out. So the first part of that kind of interesting reminder or learning point is class training, whatever you want to call it, does not end with a one-day program. It is not enough.
Or a two-day.
Or a two-day program. Or a five-day program. It would need to be weeks before you really could be – sometimes I explain, like, the first time I ever went through any formal firearms training was basic training, right? And in basic training, it's a 3-week program for your basic rifle marksmanship before you qualify, right? You spend I think it's about 3 weeks. My memory is a little rough, but
yeah,
I want to say it's about remember. 3 weeks,
yeah.
Right? And you start with like just nonstop dry practice. Dry practice to the point where you hate it. Dime drills and canteen drills and all that shit.
Oh, yeah.
Forever. just laying there in the freaking prone, running dime drills, you know, running canteen gun ups, just like constantly freaking doing this shit. Finally, you get to go to the range and shoot a little, zero your gun. Do that kind of stuff. Then finally you're on the range and you actually get to qualify. And then after you qualify, you get to go to like the night fire and the gas mask shit. And you actually get to fire your M16 on burst and all that. And it's like so amazing. It's a really long, very slow process. And by the end, even with all of that, by the end, there's still people who struggled to qualify.
Yeah.
So when you take a one-day program and we are cramming way more than what I just mentioned into one day, you're not necessarily going to see a marked improvement between 8 a.m. and 5 p.m.
No.
Because there's just not enough time doing the same thing over and over and over again. There's no sleep cycle that helps you to remember. Right. There's no rest cycle. There's no down processing cycle where you're doing classroom or visual work. Mm-hmm. Like the adult learning process is such that you have to do it over time and throughout a certain process. So if you take a one-day class, you're like, bam, I'm trained. You were entertained. You were not educated. That's it. You had a good day, but it's not really going to do anything for you. So remember, if you really want to do training, this is really for anything. You know, we happen to do firearms training, so that's what we're talking about. But whatever it may be, you've got to do it over time, consistently, repetitively. Got to be done.
Yeah, I think the people who get the most out of a 1 or 2 day course are people that are a little further along on their path of their skills when it comes to either pistol, carbine, or whatever weapon system they're using, and they're starting to find out their failure points. So reaching that failure point, identifying it, and then they can go back to the drawing table.
Right.
That's where you get the most out of those 1 and 2 day courses. The people that are starting from a very either basic or building their foundation and so on and so forth, that's exactly what they're doing. It's all about reinforcing those fundamentals. It's not about necessarily finding those failure points yet. It's about reinforcing the fundamentals.
Now, the second point that we really took away from this weekend's classes was just kind of bad weather. I mean, day one was pretty hot. Day two was incredibly windy. There was dust storms that came through. It was kind of gnarly, right? Now, if you elect to not train in bad weather, understand you're doing yourself a disservice. If you cancel a rain session or a training class or whatever it may be because like, oh, it's a little hot, it's a little cold. Oh, yeah, you know, we have people tell us all the time. They live in Phoenix and they'll be like, oh, yeah, I can't wait to come train with you guys this winter.
Mm-hmm.
Like, why don't you come train with us this summer? Oh, it's too hot. You live here, man.
Yeah.
You might want to acclimate your ass to the fact of being outside when it's hot. Like for any number of reasons, some of which we're actually going to talk about on today's show, but it's like you need to get acclimated. You must acclimate to the weather you're in. You're not always going to have the opportunity to hop from air conditioning to air conditioning to air conditioning to air conditioning, and certainly not in that moment where you actually might need these skills.
We talked about that during our summer prep, and we talked about that another show. After our summer prep, and it was recently, I can't remember which show it was, but exactly, actually, no, I'm sorry. I wrote about it in, maybe our newsletter.
Okay.
But yeah, you have to get outside, work out outside, go on runs. And I got it. Don't go on a 5 mile run when it's 115 degrees out. All right. That's a bad idea.
Right.
But in the morning, go on a run, do some yard work when it's 115. Wear sunscreen. Obviously, but do some stuff outside when it's hot. Today I'm going to be doing yard work outside. That's like on my day off, either I'm working out or I'm doing yard work. I'm doing something outside always. I'm not going air conditioning to air conditioning.
So two main points of any training that really stood out from us this weekend was one, it takes more than a day to really learn something and process something. And two, do not be afraid of bad weather, inclement weather. You know?
Sure.
It was blowing wind so hard, it was ripping freaking targets off. And so you deal with it. You just go, okay. And then you just keep going, you know, because that's the reality.
Yeah, and as an as an instructor, if there's anyone out there that is listening to the show and they're an instructor, if you ever have problems with that, with like wind tearing off targets or blowing down target stands, instead of having students wait around watching you fix stuff, have them go back, drink water, grab a snack, load up ammunition, so you're not wasting time. Make sure you're filling in those gaps.
Or have multiple instructors, which is always a good idea.
Yeah.
So you can peel one guy off and go, hey, man, you need to go fix the targets.
Right.
I'm going to take these guys over here, and I'm going to, you know, walk them through this process. I'm going to demo something to them. I always like to have multiple targets. There's a reason that we use both paper and steel.
Yeah.
And I always have paper targets, actual cardboard targets, and steel. I always have those three things, and the reason for them is because they're good for different weather conditions. Man, I've trained and a rainstorm has started. I've trained and the windstorm has started. Got super windy last night or yesterday. We got rid of all the paper target stands, threw up cardboard targets only. Way easier to deal with them because it's harder for the wind to rip them off, and then transition to steel. So it's like now we're running steel, which if the steel targets are blowing away, get the fuck out of there. That is definitely one time where you should probably leave.
That's a tornado.
That is a tornado. You should leave. Don't be there anymore. But other than that, you know, utilize multiple different target systems. Be prepared as an instructor or on your own if you're going to go out training. Be prepared for inclement weather.
Yeah.
That's an important thing. You don't want to get out there, get all set up, something happens, now you got to break it all down and go home, and you didn't get your training in. That super sucks. All right. John's not here, so Red Wire Gear Moment I'm going to handle. Red Wire Gear Moment is going to be this. Understand the reticle in your optic. I don't care if it's a red dot, an ACOG, a low-power variable, a simple crosshair. There is nothing about anything I just mentioned, all the way up to a, you know, Horus grid reticle or you know, a Christmas tree, long-range precision-style reticle. There is nothing about any of those reticles that is simple, right? They all have a reason and a process. Even your red dot has a reason and a process for why it is the way it is. You need to understand your reticles are typically capable of so much more than most people are giving them credit for. So open up the manual.
Yeah.
Take a look. If you have questions about your reticle, freaking email us. I'll explain it to you. Happily, you know, I've explained it before on the show and on our social media for independence training and everything else. Make sure that you understand the optic reticle. It is value lost in the money that you spent on that reticle or that optic, I mean, if you don't understand what's going on inside of it.
Absolutely. If you're not using it to the full capability, why do you even have it?
And we see that more often than not in classes. People just don't know what's going on in there.
Yeah.
All right, Red Wire Gear Moment brought to you by RedWireGear.com. I don't think there's any other news, is there?
I'm looking around. Stan Lee's former manager arrested in Arizona for elder abuse charges. I'm just happy to look at Arizona news right now. One suspect injured.
Do we have any shootings, bombings?
Yeah, one shooting in Arizona.
What was that?
This is yesterday.
Really?
One suspect injured in Phoenix, officer involved shooting. I just clicked on it. I don't have much information about it at the moment. Let's see.
But nothing really that big of a deal.
I mean, people hate Trump. They want him impeached.
Oh, they've been wanting that forever. Good luck, by the way. Have fun.
Stuff.
All right, we'll jump right into the topic then. Our topic for the day is, for this week, I mean, is going to be hobbies that help you prepare for emergencies. Now, an emergency is anything that takes you out of your comfort zone, to me, right? Like, I still remember in high school, right? Girls at this point are definitely freaking on their period, right? And girls would be like, oh my God, I started my period and I don't have a tampon and I need to go ask Mrs. Smith for a tampon. And I'm like, You do this once a month, right?
Mm.
And you don't carry the stuff?
Mm.
I mean, some girls did, but I always remembered, like, that was like the first time I think in my life that I realized not everybody prepares like I do. Because I grew up in a household that just naturally prepared for things. You know, my mom grew up on a freaking sheep ranch. My dad grew up literally in the freaking mountains of Jackson, Wyoming. They grew up in the middle of nowhere. They didn't have access to resources. The only people they could rely on was themselves and the people who were immediately around them, who were normally family or, you know, the cowboys that they worked with.
Mm-hmm.
That's it, man. So we just naturally were prepared for things.
Right.
No one had to tell us, you should store food. You should have a garden. You should have some livestock. We just did that. That's just what we did. You should have a little extra cash on the side. We just did that. You know, you should have a water thing. You should have a medical kit. Your people should know how to fix themselves. You should have guns. You should know how to use them. Like, we didn't have to be told that. It's just what we did. And we didn't do it from, like, crazy tinfoil hat wearing, you know, survivalist with a bunker. We were normal people. We lived normal lives, but we were definitely prepared. And honestly, I think it was at that point in high school where I'm looking around going, like, some people just don't think about shit. You know, like, it always blew my mind. It blows my mind today when some adult female will get caught, like, oh, God, unaware. You're like, how? What's it been, 20 years now this has been happening to you? How do you not have the appropriate tools for this? You know, so
yeah.
To me, and while that's, you know, not necessarily a hobby that helps you prepare for emergencies.
It's an example.
Preparing for emergencies, that's kind of where it like started in my mind, I think, honestly. And then as I got to become even older and I started looking around at people around me, I realized, wow, most people aren't prepared for shit. They're just not prepared.
No, we're so accustomed to just being able to go to the store to get food, to get water. So we have the mindset of, I need help. I'm going to call someone. It's not the case. And like when you actually need help, help's not going to be there as soon as you think they're going to be there.
And when the help shows up, like here's the reality. When people call for help, right? Search and rescue, law enforcement, EMS, fire, whatever. In their brains, in their imaginary mind, who's going to show up?
Superman.
And who actually shows up are two very different people.
Homer.
Yeah, exactly.
Homer Simpson. So, that's who is climbing out of your ambulance.
Anytime I ever did any rescue stuff, I mostly tried to very politely mock people for their stupidity. You know what I mean? It was more like, don't worry, I'm going to get out of here alive. You, maybe. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, I just cannot understand the mentality of wanting to focus on, rely on someone else. And what's even more amusing to me is people who are kind of on our side of the fence, I would say, who are kind of like, we don't really trust the government. We don't really want to give them any more power. We don't really give them any more money. But then those same people are like, yeah, the government can't be trusted. And if I ever get in trouble, I'm going to call 911. And you're like, that's the government.
Like, still is.
And people are like, the post office is so inefficient and the politicians and everything's so inefficient and such a waste of money. But I'm going to rely on a fire department to save me. And you're like, it's the same thing. You've just dressed it up differently in your brain.
Yep.
Other than that, it's the same shit. You know, we had a couple officers in our class yesterday, police officers, and one of them was talking about qualifications to everybody. And this, you know, of course, all the other students. And this one student was like, wait a minute. You're telling me that you're the person we're supposed to call to rely. You shoot that gun once a year? And he's like, yeah, once a year. And she's like, oh my God. You're like, I didn't realize it was that bad. I'm like, yeah, this is the person that you're going to bet is going to come save your life. That's nothing against him. He's a good officer. He's a good person. There's nothing wrong with him. It's the government, right? He works for the government. Yeah. Their same level of inefficiency that you're upset about with politicians and Congress and all that, it's the same level of inefficiency that this guy has to deal with.
Well, also, I think people have the mindset that these are the people that are not, you know, the cop haters out there. Think that when police officers are off duty, that they're training. It's like, That's not – for majority of the case, that is not true. For majority of the cases, police officers, that's their job.
That's all emergency personnel though.
Yeah.
Like, training.
Oh, no, no.
Clock in, clock out like everyone else.
I'm using police officers as an example. Yeah, same thing for fire and EMS, everything.
Right.
But there are police officers and there are EMS and there are fire that when they get off work, they are training.
Sure.
But that is very slim compared to the majority.
How many people at whatever your job is, how many people at your job leave work and go practice for that job?
Right.
There will be some.
There's some, yeah.
There'll be some that are out there getting better education, going to college for business or whatever. Very few.
Yeah.
Very few, because that's people clock in and they clock out, man.
And what's
when they're clocked out, they don't want to be working.
And what's shitty about fire, EMS, and police those people that are extending themselves, that are coming to training, that are going to the range on the weekends, on their days off and everything, that's not going to excel them in their profession. It's not. It's terrible. It should. Mm-hmm. They should be rewarded for their hard work.
Yeah, being a better shooter. Those two officers who were in class yesterday becoming better shooters are not going to get a raise.
Nope.
They're not going to get a promotion.
Nope.
Or that's not necessarily going to help them to work towards that goal. They're just going to be better shooters. So if they get involved in a shooting, they have a better chance of survival.
Yeah. They're more prepared. That's great. That's great. I'm not saying anything against it.
Of course.
But as far as like getting them into a position where they can maybe change some things, most likely not going to happen. The people that are going to get in the position are people that look good on paper.
Now, our cops and our fire and our EMS, you guys, you're out there doing the freaking best you can.
Oh, you guys are doing great.
We're not saying anything bad against you guys. It's the
system,
organization and the system that we are upset about. But understand, the reason we're even talking about this is to get people who maybe are still thinking that way, like, oh, I'll just call for help. Like, learn how to take care of yourself.
Yeah.
Here's some hobbies that might help you take care of yourself.
One more thing. Yeah, one more thing on that note. Police officers, EMS, and fire, they want people taking care of themselves.
Mm-hmm.
EMS would love to come on scene when someone has an arterial bleed and see a tourniquet already applied.
Right.
They would say, thank you.
Right.
That's the stuff they want to see. They would like their job to be easier and safer. Yeah, just wanted to throw that out there.
They do want you. Cops would love if when they showed up, you were already holding suspects at gunpoint.
Yeah.
They would love that.
Yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And EMS would love if when they showed up, tourniquets and chest seals were already in place.
Yeah.
Fire would love if they showed up and
the fire was out.
The fire was being controlled instead of people just standing back going, "Well, she's a burning." You know what I mean? Like, it'd be great if you were actively participating. That would be great. Most of the time, I should say, most of the time they want that. So here's some hobbies. I kind of made a list of some different things that I could just come up with. And it's going to definitely take us the whole show, I know, to go over them. My first thing is dangerous hobbies. All right? Have dangerous hobbies. Now, that doesn't have to mean that you go put a wingsuit on and go jump off a freaking mountain and fly. That's cool if you do that. But here's what dangerous extracurricular activities start to do for you. Right? They start to get you used to handling adrenaline dumps.
Yep.
And then eventually, when you get to the point where you aren't getting an adrenaline dump from that process anymore, which is what you want, you can now control that.
Yep.
That way you don't get an adrenaline dump when things get tight. Because you actually don't want an adrenaline dump.
Nope.
Right? But the first time you ever do anything dangerous, there's going to be a little bit of an adrenaline dump.
Yeah.
After that, it's going to be less and less and less until eventually you're just doing this because you enjoy it and it's fun. But if it's dangerous, it starts to teach you how to handle the idea of danger.
Right.
Right? Like a couple weekends ago, I went up to Torreweep. I talked about it last week on the show. It was a great trip. And I hooked up to a couple anchor points on some local trees and I leaned back up off a Torreweep, which is a 3,000-foot straight drop. To most people that do what I do, that's no big deal.
Mm-hmm.
Leaning back over 3,000 feet, I've leaned back out of way more than that. But leaning back, looking down, enables me to appreciate where I'm at and what I'm doing.
Mm-hmm.
Was it a little scary? Of course it was. You'd be stupid to not be a little scared. Because it's that healthy fear, as we've talked about so many times on the show, that made sure that I double-check my anchors.
Yeah.
A healthy fear makes sure I double-check my equipment.
Mm-hmm.
A healthy fear makes sure that when I lean back, I test my gear before fully committing to leaning back over 3,000 feet of dead space.
Yeah.
Right?
You know the people that who aren't afraid? People that commit suicide.
I was going to say, the people who are dead, right? Yeah. Those people aren't afraid. So it's like, I'm going to lean back and yeah, there's that little bit in my stomach that's like, hey man, don't fuck this up, you know? And so, but as you lean back, you're like, all right, now I can sit here and I can appreciate this view.
Sure.
And my heart's beating a little bit faster because I enjoy this kind of stuff, but I'm not getting the same adrenaline dump that I did years and years ago the first time I rappelled off of whatever it was that I rappelled off.
Yeah, your adrenaline essentially on drip rather than on the dump.
Exactly. I can kind of control it to the point where I'm like, okay, I'm ready. If something were to happen, I would be prepared.
Mm-hmm.
But this is good. This is fun. I like this.
Yeah.
So having those basic dangerous hobbies of getting used to the idea of being in physical danger. And there's a lot of different things that you can do. There's a variety of things you can do. Now, understand there's a difference between dangerous and stupid, right? Dangerous is one thing. Dangerous means there's an element of danger that is mostly able to be controlled by use of techniques or equipment or precautions. Stupid is just when you're just doing stupid things, right? Me grabbing a rope, throwing it around a tree, Swiss harnessing myself in and basically trying to alpine lower myself down that cliff, that would have been stupid because if I made just one single mistake, I would fall 3,000 feet.
Yeah,
that'd dangerous be, that'd be fun. Is me. It'd be fun right till the end, right? So it's like dangerous is me having the appropriate tools and knowledge, hooking up on some natural anchors, mm-hmm. and then, you know, slightly rappelling back off the edge. Like, that's dangerous. It's right. not stupid.
Yeah.
So there is a difference between the two.
Absolutely.
So in kind of in that vein, but not exactly what I'm going to say next, gardening, right? Gardening isn't a dangerous hobby, but it is a risky hobby, meaning there's an opportunity for you to put a lot at stake and come out with nothing.
Hmm.
There's a huge learning curve in gardening. You don't just open up the ground, throw some seeds in, dump some water on them, and bam, tomatoes. There's a lot that goes into figuring out in different climates, with different types of soil, with different types of seeds. How do I garden? How do I handle animals? How do I handle pests? How do I handle maybe pets? How do I handle bugs? How do I handle inclement weather? Extreme sun, extreme cold, extreme wind. All those things are damaging to my garden.
Yeah.
And how can I grow some food to eat? Now, I don't need to grow my food to eat. In fact, it takes way more time, effort, and energy for me to grow my food to eat than it does for me to make the money to go down and buy the freaking food. But that being said, the biggest problem with me having no idea about how to garden is that if it ever comes a time where gardening could supplement what I'm doing, or I could garden and actually that might be the only way for me to eat,
mm-hmm.
the only time that's actually going to happen, if I have no gardening experience, I don't know the difference in soils, I don't know how the extreme heat may affect it, extreme cold may affect it, then my learning curve is going to be much sharper and the penalty is going to be much greater. So basic gardening. You can indoor garden. You can tower garden. I lived in a townhome for a while and we gardened in Rubbermaid tubs on the patio. You know, we grew corn, a couple stalks of corn in a just a big giant planter.
Hmm.
You don't have to have it. People think gardening, they think, oh, I got to have all this land. You don't, man. You can garden indoors. They have those hanging tomato plants, hanging strawberry right. plants. You know, you can garden if you want. Just take the opportunity to grow a thing.
Yeah.
What does it take to keep a plant alive? More than you think, right? Reading.
Yep.
Reading is a great hobby to have that helps you prepare for emergencies. When you get in the habit of reading, there's a couple of things that happen. One, like, let me back up and say this. Some of the people I respect the most are avid readers. Some of them are war fighters. Some of them are scholars. Some of them are engineers. Some of them are regular freaking people, right? Just a housewives, whatever. Some of the people that I respect the most are avid readers. Why? Because they're constantly looking to expand their base of knowledge and ideas. Maybe they're just reading a fantasy novel. That's fine. They're expanding their mind. They're stretching their imagination. They're envisioning those things in their brain, and that's important. Then they're probably also reading some self-help books. Good. They're trying to improve themselves and work on how can I be a better version of myself. Then they're reading a book about, you know, mechanics and how to work on your own vehicle because they want to know, how does my engine actually work in my car? I don't understand it. Let's find out. And on and on and on. Reading is a great way to help you prepare for emergencies because obviously you can actually read books about preparing for emergencies. There's a lot of good ones out there, so read them.
Mm-hmm.
But just reading in general gets you in the habit of intaking and processing information without having to be told it or shown it.
Right.
To where you have to read the information, process the information, internalize it, and then produce a result. So, you know, reading is a great hobby.
Yep.
Along with reading is just general education. You should constantly be doing something to educate yourself. Online schools, certification programs, physically going to college, going to training classes of any kind for anything. If you see a free class, you should be taking it. I don't care if it's a free class on origami. You should go take it. What's the worst that's going to happen? You're going to learn origami? God forbid you have another cool skill that you can whip out in the middle of a party and blow someone's freaking mind.
Mm-hmm.
Like, dude, educate yourself on everything possible. If you don't understand something, educate yourself.
Yeah, I have a rule. Learn something new every single day. No matter what it is, how small or big, I learn something new every single day. I mean, there's not a reason not to.
And sometimes those learnings are relearning something.
Yeah.
You know, something that I forgot or something I wasn't paying attention to, or I'm just like, oh man, how many times am I going to have to learn this lesson? So constant form of education is a great way to prepare for emergencies. Why? Because one, again, you're intaking more knowledge and information. And you're preparing your brain to have to deal with a wider scope of things in an emergency. You're also preparing yourself potentially for that specific emergency if you're educating yourself. Like in, you know, you want to know how to handle a gunfight, you come to us and learn how to shoot and fight. Well, that's a very specific thing. Mm-hmm. But if you're just generally educating yourself, you're keeping your mind open. Your brain is a muscle and it has to be exercised. And without that exercise, it's just going to get apathetic. All right. Let's see here. So, hey, Dobson, no, send me a link to that story. A guy in Hawaii that died from a shark bite. Yeah, Dobson, hit me with that link if you can. Another reason competition shooting works, people watching you will get your stress up. Number one fear is public speaking. That will get my heart pumping. Still fear and hate it. Absolutely. I mean, there's another good point of going out and doing something that's challenging. Like, that's a great hobby to have. Competition shooting. Mm-hmm. How can competition shooting help you? Well, one, it's going to make you a better shooter, mm-hmm. hands down. Now, while shooting is only a part of fighting, mm-hmm. right? Competition shooting makes you a better shooter, not necessarily a better fighter, but definitely a better shooter. Because if it's going to make you a better shooter, why not competitively shoot?
Right.
Along with that, like Scott here mentioned, it gives you that opportunity to get out in front of people, perform in front of people, master your own skill, master your own stress, master that adrenaline dump, keep yourself in check, calm yourself down, all skills that are very, very important in competition. All right. That's not really a link, Dobson, but thanks for a minimal amount of information. I'll find it. All right. I got it already. Okay. Let's sidetrack for a second. Man killed in Hawaii shark attack. Witness say skin just torn off. A man from California died after an apparent shark attack in Hawaii. The Maui Fire Department said the incident happened around 9 a.m. The 65-year-old man was pulled ashore with injuries that were traumatic and life-threatening and consistent with a shark attack. Allison Keller, who witnessed the man being pulled ashore, told Hawaii News the man looked unconscious. He was transferred to a gurney. Trying to find his... Maui said the man was swimming in water roughly 20 to 25 feet deep. Knee was gone, or leg was gone below the knee. Saturday's attack was the sixth attack in Hawaii so far this year.
Damn, that's a lot.
Mm-hmm. Might be
a rogue shark.
Tiger. Might be a tiger, they say.
Jaws.
Might be Jaws, they say.
It's a great white.
It did say something about it. A great white shark 10 feet long, 500 pounds detected in the Long Island Sound. Yeah, man. They're freaking sharks, bro. They live out there. They're going to...
That's their home. If you go in there, they have every right to bite you. Just as if a shark walked into your house, you have every right to shoot it.
That's right. It's not a shark attack when you're in their house.
Yeah.
All right?
So don't be disappointed if you get your leg bit off. You are trespassing.
You are the trespasser. All right. All right. So beyond education, physical functional fitness. The best way to prepare for emergencies. Regardless of the emergency, it's almost always going to require some level of physical fitness. If the emergency is beyond a standard everyday, like we ran out of paper in the copier, okay, maybe some people think that's an emergency. Doesn't require a high level of physical fitness, but I'm talking about larger scale emergencies. Changing a tire is even fits within that. It's going to require some level of physical fitness. Just breaking those lug nuts off can sometimes be a real treat, right?
Well, especially in the state of Arizona. If you're in Phoenix during summer.
And you're not acclimated.
That's a bad day.
And you got to climb out on the side of the road. It's 120 degrees, about 250 degrees coming off the asphalt.
Oh, yeah. And here's a quick just on that. Here's a tip on that note. Have some type of blanket or something that you can lay down on the ground. For that purpose.
Hell yeah.
Because it sucks. Oh, yeah. I had to learn that the hard way.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I keep a blanket and a tarp.
Yep.
At all times in my truck, man. Yeah, the last thing I want to do is climb down on the asphalt. I've been
there. It sucks.
It's hot.
Yep.
So physical functional fitness, right? We've talked about functional fitness on the show before many times. The last show kind of got down into the due process thing. But functional fitness, can I functionally do the things that I want to do? Can I move? Can I lift the things I need to lift? Can I run a short distance? My idea of functional fitness is this. This is just my personal thing, all right?
Mm-hmm.
You should be able to, on demand, meaning anytime during the day, regardless of how you feel, lift half your body weight. Right, to your chest. You should be able to lift half your body weight to your chest. All right, that's reasonable. At any point in time, you should be able to
curl. Is that what you're talking about? Like curling?
Well, just lift. However, yes, curl. Bicep curl, one arm. You should be able to lift from the ground to your body half your body weight.
Mm.
Right? I mean, that's not really that much.
No.
You know? So that's one thing. Thing number two, you should be able to do 50 push-ups. On demand. 50, I think, is a good number.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you push hard enough, you can get there. Sure. Now, some of you guys are like, that's rookie numbers, kid. And that's fine. I'm talking about basics here. And some of you guys are like, not a chance I could do that. Okay. Now you got something to work on, right? Sure. You should be able to do 50. That's only, that means you're only pushing your body weight up 50 times. And it's not even all of your body weight,
no.
Right? So that. You should be able to pull your own body weight straight up, a pull-up. As many fingers as you have on one hand, all right? So if you're a normal person who has five fingers, you're good. If you have six, you got to do some extra work, all right? If you lost a finger in a mining accident or something, then I guess you got to do less, all right? But five times. You should be able to lift your body from a dead hang. You should be able to lift your body five times, right? You should be able to sprint balls out for a half a mile. That's 880 yards. Just, I don't care if you collapse at the end, but you should be able to run as fast as you can for a half a mile. That gives you enough distance typically to get to one geographical feature over, right? Mm. It allows you to get away from somebody. It allows you typically to completely change directions, right? 880 yards, a half a mile, balls out sprint, right? And you should be able to run a mile. At whatever speed you run a mile, I don't care if it's a 12-minute mile, 10-minute mile, or a 7-minute mile, you should be able to run a mile. Not mm-hmm. fall balls out sprint a half a mile, but just run. Maintain a decent clip for a mile.
Right.
That's like, for me, that's basic functional fitness,
mm-hmm.
right? Lift half your body weight from the ground to your chest level, be able to push your own body weight up roughly in a push-up 50 times, be able to pull your body weight up at least five times, sprint balls out for a half a mile, and run for a mile. And if you can't do those things, well, now you got some goals to work on.
Yeah.
But those are some basic levels. You can go way beyond that, of course. But just for basic functional fitness, that's a way to make sure my body's going to be capable of doing some physical action. So basic physical functional fitness is a great way to prepare for emergencies. Something we've already talked about that kind of ties in with fitness, in my opinion, is acclimation.
Yeah.
That weather acclimation is important because it allows for us to actually go outside and do these things, especially if we have to be outside doing them, like changing a tire or fighting for our life or whatever, right? Hiking our family or our loved ones or ourselves away from a bad situation. Anytime someone says to me, well, if I had to, I could, whatever they're about to say is wrong.
Yep.
No. If you just had to, you couldn't.
No.
What you're saying when you say, well, if I had to is I can't. That's what you're saying.
Yeah.
I can't now, but somehow magically if I had to, I could.
Nobody rises to the occasion. And I would tell people that when I was in the military is we'd be doing whatever type of exercise or drill and they would do something and be like, well, if I was in combat, I would do it this way. No, fucking wrong. You're not going to rise to the occasion. How you this gets tossed around a lot, but how you train is how you fight.
Mm.
And that goes into play exactly what we're talking about now. Not going to rise to the occasion.
One of our listeners has a really good point here. In my adult life, I found myself gravitating the hobbies that I need to learn and teach myself to do. Whether reloading ammo, useful, gardening, useful, or brewing beer, very useful. It's incredibly satisfying to enjoy the fruits of your continuing education.
Yeah.
That's another great benefit and a great point, Eric, and that is these hobbies produce results, and these results are phenomenal.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, how nice is it for Eric to go out and shoot the ammo he loaded, to eat the food he gardened, to share that with his family, to brew his own beer, to invite his friends over and say, hey, man, we're going to have some freaking hair of the dog. I brewed this shit. Yeah. You know what I mean? We're going to have my beer, and we're going to eat my food that I garden, and we're going to go shoot my ammo. That's a great thing.
Yeah.
You know? I was reading a thing the other day, and it said, have you ever noticed there's never a Lamborghini TV ad? Have you ever seen a TV ad for Lamborghini?
No.
So Lamborghini actually has a reason for that.
Hmm.
Do you know what it is?
No.
Lamborghini said, we don't have TV ads because the people who buy Lamborghinis aren't sitting around watching TV.
Huh.
And it's kind of like something to think about.
Yeah.
What are you spending the most of your time doing? Now, look, all right, I'm not saying I don't sit around and watch a TV show every now and then, but I'm talking about that continuing, always in front of the TV thing.
Mm-hmm.
Dude, what are you doing with your time?
Yeah.
You know, I'm sure Eric enjoys a little TV from now and again, but he's also reloading and gardening and brewing his own beer.
Yeah.
So he's going to go earned it, right?
Sure.
I mean, that's a fine opportunity. So yeah, that's a great deal. Outdoor recreation in general. Just getting outside. Get outside. This kind of falls in with the fitness and the acclimation, but just getting outside. Learning about the plants in your area, learning about the animals in your area, learning about the geography in your area, learning about the history of your area, getting out and, like, when was the last time you walked around your whole neighborhood, not just your block or your street, but actually really learned it, memorized it? Could you sit down right now and draw a map of three streets north of you, three streets south, three streets east, and three streets west? And roughly how many houses there are, roughly, and what the streets look like, roughly. And if you had to navigate it or draw someone a map, could you do it? If you had to draw me a map to get from your house to wherever, you know, major market or gas station or whatever you go to, could you do that? You know, how well do you know the place where you live? Now look at your work. Now look at where you recreate.
Mm-hmm.
Could you do the same?
Right.
Ben Avery Shooting Facility is maybe one of the largest shooting facilities in the Southwest. It's a beautiful place. Run by the government, so it's wildly mismanaged. But
biggest as of now.
What's that?
I said biggest as of now.
We're about to crush it. No big deal. But but what's cool about their facility is all the cool stuff that's there.
Mm-hmm.
The majority of people that I'll train with there who have ever shot at the main range, when they come over to the training base, they go, I didn't even know that this was here.
Mm-hmm.
And you go, it's a straight line. Like, literally the facility is laid out in a straight east to west line.
Yeah, the road's not straight, but yeah, the ranges are.
All you would have to do is just drive down the road. You're telling me you've come to this range.
Right.
And you've never just driven down the road to see what else is here? Yeah. It's massive. The public range is 10% of the entire facility, maybe 15%, maybe.
Mm.
The rest of the facility is amazing.
Yeah, and the 1,000 meter, I mean, that's
a 1,000 yard freaking KD range. It's a
huge range.
Some people don't even know that.
What's 1,000 by what?
It's got like 50 shooting lanes.
It's huge.
I don't know how wide it is. Couple hundred yards easily.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you're like, dude, you didn't even just drive down the road. Like, the place you recreate, you didn't even just drive down the road to see where it ends.
Mm-hmm.
You never even been there. That blew my mind because we've been training there several times recently, and I get that a lot from people that, I didn't even know this was over here. I'm like, how? Now, if they'd never been there before, that's one thing. But, you know, when they've been, oh, yeah, I used to shoot at the main range all the time. I didn't even know this was over here. I'm like, how did you not know this was over here?
Yeah.
So just knowing what's going on around you. And that, to me, that's kind of the outdoor recreation thing. It's like, go to the park, play a game, throw the football around, throw the baseball around, go outside and recreate outside. You want to do some of the other things we've been talking about? Reading, read outside.
Mm.
You want to watch TV? Watch TV outside. Do everything you can to be outside. Now, there's a certain point in time, it's too hot, it's too cold, it's too windy, it's pouring down rain. All right, I get it. You can't do everything outside. I understand. But the things that you can do outside, even when you go to a restaurant, if they have a patio option, eat outside. Get used to being outside, outdoors. Breathe the fresh air, as it were, in Phoenix, sort of fresh air. Right? But be outside. All right. In that kind of same vein, hunting, fishing, trapping. You know, you don't have to do them all, but try to pick at least one, either hunt, fish, or trap. And you can do all three of those things pretty easily just about everywhere.
Yeah.
You don't have to go hunt an elk or deep sea fish or freaking trap bobcats or whatever. Get some gopher traps. Get some mouse traps. Like, literally learn how to trap a rat. Can you even trap a mouse? Trapping is all about outsmarting an animal's natural instincts, mm-hmm. or using their natural instincts against them, using their habits against them.
Yep.
See if you can even trap a rat, trap a mouse. Can you even get one of those? Start there. That's a good place to start.
I like trapping squirrels.
Yeah.
Because they like to run up usually a log that's either like horizontal to the tree, mm. and you just put like the nooses around, and you put like peanut butter trail up it, mm. and they just run through straight into the noose.
Yep.
Yeah, it's too easy. We did it at Sear, and we're just like, thanks.
Yeah, they run right up that log.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, trapping is good. Fishing. There's so many fishing opportunities. Even mm-hmm. in metropolitan areas, there's fishing opportunities. You don't need to eat the fish. And most of the fish that you're going to get in a metropolitan area, I wouldn't eat them. But learn how to figure out what bait a certain fish is going to like. And learn patience.
Yeah.
You got to sit a lot
sure.
in fishing and just do nothing.
Can't go wrong with chicken liver.
Chicken liver is good for catfish, that's for sure.
Yeah.
So learn. And then guess what you can do while you're waiting for fish? Read.
Yeah.
Work out, talk to people, recreate outdoors. Plus, it teaches me a useful skill in an emergency. Mm-hmm. Not that you're necessarily going to fish. Like, I'll see survival kits that are like, they have fishing lines and fishing lures. And I always used to do, when I used to teach survival classes a lot in Arizona, I would always be like, yes, if you're in a place where you can successfully fish in Arizona, just walk over to the road and get a ride out. All right. Don't worry about setting up a trot line or mm-hmm. or trying to, you know, set up some emergency fishing, you know, water trap or right. fish trap or anything. You don't need to do that. If there's fish easily accessible there in Arizona, there's people there. Just yeah. walk over to the road and hitchhike out of there. You know what I mean? Like, so it's a little different based on where you go. There's other places like Colorado, for example, where, man, I've fished lakes in Colorado that were hours right. from the nearest human being, and that's just the way that they are. So in that situation, fishing may be more of a life-saving incident.
Well, in Arizona, the fish are put there.
Mostly, yeah.
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 Not all over Arizona, but
damn near.
Yeah.
Yeah, damn near.
Yeah.
Most of our lakes are man-made here, mm-hmm. so. Hunting, same thing. You can start small, you know. Hunt pigeons, hunt rats, hunt
predator hunting.
Yeah, start with a pellet rifle. Start with a .22. Start mm-hmm. with a shotgun. Mm-hmm. Start with something that's relatively easy. Go out and hunt squirrels. Go out and hunt rabbits. Go out and just see if you can outsmart an animal. Guess what? They may be dumb. They have way better instincts than we do. Until you can tune into them.
Their main goal every single day is to survive. It's not to get dressed. It's not to get in the car. It's not to go to work and make money. Their goal in life is to survive. Try to outsmart them. See if you can. It's fun.
And you don't have to kill
no.
in any of these three things.
Nope.
You can trap with Havaharts. Mm-hmm. Right? You can fish, catch, and release. And you can hunt with a camera.
Yep.
I have hunted. I have drawn down on a lot of animals and knew that I could kill them without killing them.
Mm-hmm.
Because I outsmarted them. I'm looking at them where they're laying down. Maybe it wasn't the right animal. When I was deer hunting last year, had a great hunt, got up on this pack of javelinas, saw them, I don't know, 200 yards out, got within like 40, 50 yards of them, just using my stalking and tech and utilizing the, you know, the terrain to hide me until eventually I came up over the berm, pulled out my rifle and just dry practiced on them. You know, made sure my rifle's unloaded and just dry practiced on them. Like, yep, I could shoot any of these that I would want to. And I could eat them if I had to, or I could use them, whatever, right? The idea is that you don't have to kill
right.
in order to successfully hunt, fish, or trap. So if you're against it, fine. But can you do it? Can you outsmart an animal?
Mm-hmm.
Outsmarting an animal presents all kinds of great skill sets, not only the potential to get food, but also the potential of when you can outsmart animals, trust me, you can outsmart people.
Yeah, because we forget it, but we are animals. Mm-hmm. We are part of the animal kingdom.
we add a different thought process to it. So whereas an animal may take a certain path through a forest that a human wouldn't take, or vice versa, the more you can outsmart animals, the better you are at thinking about people. I've become a very good hunter of people over the years because I've become a better hunter of animals over the years, and vice versa. Tinkering. And by tinkering, I mean generally just fixing shit. Instead of throwing broken things away, see if you can fix them. And you're not always going to be able to fix them. Mm-hmm. Not everyone can solder. Not everyone can, you know, rewire. Not everyone can fix broken plastic or broken metal, or not everyone can weld. All right, maybe those are skill sets you go, hey, I should probably learn how to do this. And you could go down to community college or take an online class or whatever and learn how to do something.
YouTube.
Yeah, YouTube that shit. Buy some tools, get the skills, do the thing. But just general tinkering. Learn how to fix things. Mm-hmm. Just try. You're going to fail sometimes. There's plenty of shit I've thrown away because I could not fix it. And it wasn't worth taking it to anyone else to fix. But at least give it a shot, right? Mm-hmm. Try to fix something. And in that vein, mechanicking. I hate mechanicking.
Yeah.
Right? I hate working on cars. It's not my thing. I don't enjoy it. Some people do. I ain't that guy. Mm-hmm. Right? That ain't me. I'm like, I look at the engine. I'm like, yeah, I know how that works. And like, all we got to do is pull this part off and pull the SR. I'm like, what's this wee shit? You got a mouse in your pocket? I ain't doing that. You know what I mean? I'll take it down to my mechanic. Mm-hmm. My mechanic, he loves that shit. That's what he lives for. He will fix all this for me. I do not want to do it myself. But it doesn't mean I can't.
Yeah.
Now, some things I can't because I just don't understand all the new computer shit.
Sure. Yeah, older vehicles are easy. I was restoring a 1959 Chevy Apache. Awesome stepside truck, just pickup truck. It was a beautiful truck. And I was restoring the entire thing. I ended up selling it when I moved from Georgia to here when I got out, just because it was too much. And just bringing it across the country and all that kind of stuff. So, but yeah, it was a blast. Literally teaching myself how to restore a truck. It was a great time.
So when I was a teenager, my dad bought this 56 Chevy stepside truck. And it was a beautiful truck. It was really beat up, run down, engine didn't run, all that. Needed new wood in the back, needed total engine overhaul, new tires, lots of paint, lots of work on the inside. And I learned a lot about tools, engines, mechanical operation, hard work, and kind of generally figuring things out that we didn't know the answer to, trying different paths. I learned a lot about that, which can be applied to things well outside of car mechanicking just by helping to restore that truck.
Right.
I would probably never do that again in my life. I have almost – my dad likes that stuff. I have no interest in it.
I'll get a truck again and restore it.
Yeah, I mean I
– like when I'm done working.
Like yeah, maybe if I'm like super road. Old, I would love to like restore an old Nova or an old Chevelle. You know, those things are so freaking cool.
I don't get a Nova. I think Novas are the ones with the gas tanks like right below the trunk.
Yeah.
You get rear-ended.
They explode all the time. Yeah. Yeah. So, but I like them. They're cool.
It was a Nova, right, that has the
fuel tank? I'm pretty sure it's a Nova, yeah. There's also the El Camino.
Oh, yeah.
Always wanted to get an old El Camino and restore an El Camino. I don't know what it is about a car truck that just amuses the shit out of me, but.
You can do a lot of cool things with them. And they have a lot of room under the hood.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, because they're big old freaking hoods. Yeah. So, like, there's not this strong desire in me. Like, I know guys who are like, I change my own oil and I do all that. I'm like, I don't. I take it as a shot. Get an oil change. You know what I mean? Like, I have no interest in doing most of the shit on my own truck. I don't. You know, people are like, I put my own lift kits on. I'm like, I didn't. I took it to the mechanic. Mechanic put my lift kit on. Like, that's what I want. Doesn't mean I don't know how to do it.
Right. And that's the thing is, do you just take it to your mechanic to get the oil change because you don't know how to, or just because, you know, you necessarily don't want to?
And it's more efficient for my time.
Right.
For me to spend a couple hours maintaining my truck is not worth it compared to the couple other hours I would rather spend either working or with my kids.
And oil changes are pretty cheap right now.
Yeah.
I mean, I remember at one time they were crazy expensive. And I remember that's when I was doing my own. Now you can get them for like 30-some-odd bucks. It's not bad.
I use the synthetic stuff, so it's a little bit more, but it's still not
terrible. Yeah.
Yeah. It's not terrible. If you can and you have the time, volunteering – for emergency services. EMS, fire, search and rescue, even law enforcement. Volunteer. Law enforcement has volunteer organizations, the reserves, sheriff's department has their posses. they have a reserve deputy program. Fire, of course, volunteer firefighters, EMS, volunteer paramedics, and search and rescue is mostly volunteers most of the time. Mm. And all kinds. You can do horseback, you can do backcountry, you can do technical, you can do jeep posse, you can do quad posse. There's all kinds of stuff you can do in any of these worlds where you can volunteer. What's the benefit? Well, downside is going to take some time on your part to get certified and get the training, do the background checks, and get hired basically as a volunteer.
Sure.
Because unfortunately, you'll just get a walk-in and go like, I want to volunteer. And they go, thank God. And then they just give you a badge and you roll on. Like, you have to go through the same process as everyone else. You just don't get paid for it.
Yeah.
But your time requirement is very minimal. Like, reserve police officer here in Phoenix, for example, is one shift a month, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's hardly anything, right? But it gives you the opportunity to then get out in your community and see what's going on. What's a common injury? What's a common crime? How are people handling it? What do people know? What is the average person really capable of doing? Mm-hmm. And obviously enhancing and increasing your own skills and abilities. So, man, volunteer. Mm-hmm. As much as you can, volunteer. Volunteer at the Forest Service. Volunteer at the Park Service. There's all these major organizations are going to take volunteers.
Yeah.
Because they need more help anyway.
Yeah.
Volunteer. Go out. Learn better skills. Learn from people in things that are outdoor, recreation-based that you can better prepare for emergencies. Last thing I've got on my list here is radio, comms, ham, whatever it is you want to do, learn how to use a radio properly. I'm not talking AM, FM here. I'm talking about an actual transmitting radio and not an FRS where you just turn it on, select the channel, and hit go. I mean, learn how to program a channel or learn how to set up a repeater. Learn about different antennas. You know, learn about how to scan channels.
Mm.
Learn about how to effectively communicate on a radio. Spend some time. There's some great programs that teach you how to do it. There's some good people we know we can turn you on to. If you have some questions, let me know. But there's tons of application of having a couple really good radios and being well set up for them.
Yeah.
Just generally able to communicate. If the cell phones go down, can you communicate?
Yeah, in time of emergency, and perfect example of this was 9/11. Mm. In New York, cell service was gone.
Yep.
Nobody could make a call or receive a call because of the towers were so overloaded.
Mm.
That's a perfect example of an emergency and trying to communicate to either a higher level of care, the professional responders, or your loved ones. That's just one example of why comms is so important.
So what are your guys' ideas of what hobbies prepare for emergencies? What do you guys do to help you prepare for emergencies? Make sure that you comment on the video if you're watching on Facebook. Send us an email, send us a message, whatever. If you're listening on Podbean or Spotify or iTunes or whatever other programs we're on, make sure that you send us that information. We'll share it on next week's show. You know, what do you guys do hobby-wise to prepare for emergencies? Whatever you do with your time, and especially on a day like Memorial Day, none of our brothers or sisters who died in service of our military and our country didn't see themselves living out the rest of their lives.
Mm-hmm.
You don't know when your time is. And, you know, I remember growing up, my dad used to reference his service in Vietnam by saying, I'm glad I wasn't 6 inches either way. And he's referencing being, if I was 6 inches to the left or 6 inches to the right, if I wouldn't have got that 6 inches lower, whatever it was,
mm-hmm.
I could have caught a bullet just as easy as the next guy.
Yep.
And so you just don't always know when your time is up. And when it's up, man, it's up.
Yep.
And you don't know how much longer you're going to have to live. You could live to a ripe old age. You could die tomorrow. Whatever it is, make sure you're making the most of the time that is given and that you're preparing yourself and the people that you love as best as you can for emergencies so that you increase your chance of surviving such a bad situation.
Yeah, and one more thing. With everything that we mentioned, if these are things that you do practice or you're going to practice, teach other people. Teach your children. Teach your loved ones. Get your wife on board. Get your girlfriend on board. more people that are prepared, it just makes life, your life, easier, because if an emergency does happen, that means that you don't have to hold somebody's hand or they don't have to hold your pocket.
Remember, you can bring us out to train with you. Get hosting information, info@trainingaz.com. We'll happily come out to wherever you are in the country, set up a training course with you. If you get enough people for an open enrollment class, you train for free. We can also do everything we do private, of course, and that's most of what we travel for, actually, is private classes. Make sure you follow us on Facebook and Instagram as The Arms Room Show, Independence Training, and Red Wire Gear. We're also on YouTube's Independence Training. Make sure you check out some of the educational videos we put up. We're proud members of the Heroes Media Group. Be sure to check out the other shows that are on the network. A lot of cool stuff out there. My personal favorite is The Decision Hour, but there's some other really great programs on there as well. Next week, we're going to have a guest on the show, Garrett, my mini-me. he's going to talk with us about growing up with guns and what that was like. And people often ask me, you know, when did you start your kids shooting? I never started them. It just is, right? When did they start hunting? They just did, you know? So he's going to talk with us about growing up with guns, hunting, growing up in an outdoor environment, you know, growing up with someone who smokes you for PT, you know? Never beat my kids. I didn't have to. I just smoke them.
Corrective training.
You know? But he's going to be in here talking with us about what it's like to grow up with guns and growing up in a hunting environment and how he's different compared to the other people that he's around on a daily basis. And that's definitely true.
That'll be fun.
Until next time, stay aware, stay safe, and train hard. You've been listening to The Arms Room.